Everywhere.
Anywhere.
Like anyway. All right, so today we've got Eric talking about his current
Backwards, I
research.
guess.
And so I'll give it over to Eric.
Okay, great. So we're still settling on a title, but this is our working title. In context algebra. The one that I came up with was learning group operations in context. We'll see, but that's kind of what I'll be talking about today. So I wanted to start out by talking about what is a group. So,
Oh, could we close the? Oh, I can't see all the slides here.
Here. Let me see. Okay, and this. Okay, great. And then,
Okay. Oh.
alt.
Okay, great. Yeah, so so in math, a group is a set that is equipped with an like a binary operation. So it takes two elements in the set and then maps back to the set. And groups satisfy three properties. So one is associativity. So like if you have like basically these you stick these parentheses somewhere. So A times B is the same times C is the same as A times B times C. And then the for something to be a group, the set has to have an identity element. So we call this E, and A times E should be A, and E times A should be A. And then also sets have every element of a set has an inverse, which maps back to the identity. So why a study
Can
group?
I just
Sure,
I just want to so I'm just like thinking about the symmetry group, for instance, here. So I'm just trying to map like that top thing to the symmetry. So like for an for one or like a rotation group. So like one rotation would be what are the two elements there that are that output
I mean, we'll talk about some of those like specifically, but so we're like for like a rotation group, for example, you could pick like one permutation of the group and then just use that to cycle through all the elements. But yeah, and we'll walk through an example of that in a bit. Cool. Yeah. So why study groups? So group theory is kind of the study of like symmetry and invariance under like a set of transformations. And I think these are like important properties in general, like in lots of domains. So the things that come to mind, so one, like this kind of like symmetry is like natural both in text and in like vision. So in text, like you can think of examples like this. So like when the going gets tough, the tough get going. That's like a nice little symmetry. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So and then it's not the size of the dog in the fight, but it's the size of the fight and the dog that counts. So these are called like chiasmus. So there's like A, B, VA patterns. And then like in the vision domain, we use this all the time for like image augmentation or like contrastive and other representation learning methods. We like leverage these symmetries and invariances to learn nice representations. So what are some of the examples of like mathematical groups here that we'll be looking at? So one example is like the integers with addition, and those. So yeah, we'll talk about this later, but like order is sort of like the size of the group. So like integers have there's infinite number of integers. There's like cyclic groups, so you can think of that as like modular arithmetic. There's dihedral groups, which are like the study of like regular n-gons, and we'll talk about examples of these in a bit. And then there's symmetric groups, which Alex had mentioned, which are sort of the set of all of the permutations of the sets. So it's like order n factorial if you have a set of size n. And this is just an example of like the symmetric group of size 4. So there's like 24 ele 24 different elements, different ways that you can have like little cycles inside of them.
So is every arrow a group element here?
I think every set of like
Every four numbers is a
numbers
group element.
is a group element.
Sorry, what's the difference between the red and the blue arrows? Just like...
I this is from Wikipedia. I think it's just like the kind of operation that you're performing. So like let's just pick like a little subgroup. So like 4312 maps to 4231. Let's see. It looks like it's just moving like the two to the beginning, right? If you take this little arrow and then like this one would move the one to the front here.
I think it's a sign, the number of transpositions to get back to the identity element. That might be it.
Could be, yeah. I'm not entirely sure
But like, didn't we say we combine two elements?
what's that?
The group operation combines two elements, right?
Right.
So I kind of forgot how to read these plots, so
The,
we
this is not
should.
that this is not that important, but because I'll
Yeah.
have a better plot later to talk about it, yeah. So and then so there's also all these other kinds of structures that you can stick on top of a set and that's not necessarily a group. So there's all these other kinds of things. So like magmas, quasi groups, semi groups, and they all have different properties. So like a magma is sort of like the least structured, and all you need is that like the operation is closed. So if you take two things, it just brings you back into the set and it doesn't have any other properties that groups have, like all that. Great. And then just some other like preliminary definitions. So we a group is called abelian if it, if its operation is commutative. So this isn't always the case, but like for like cyclic groups, for example, this sort of thing holds. And then yeah, the order of a group is the number of elements that the group has. And then just to review, like a permutation is a bijective mapping from a set to itself. So if you have like a set of three elements, you can think of like the identity permutation would just like have an ordered tuple of 1, 2, 3. And if maybe there's like some other permutation that flips 2 and 3 but keeps one the same. And there's another, and then there's lots of permutations, but like this one would keep move 2 to the front, 1 and then 3. And then there's this nice theorem called Cayley's theorem, which says any finite group is isomorphic to a subgroup of the symmetric group. So symmetric group, remember, is the set of all the permutations of a set. And so if you think of any finite group, you can just represent every element in the group as a permutation of the set. So we'll walk through two examples just to kind of make that more concrete.
Well, does everyone know what isomorphic means?
I think so. Yeah, does anyone, I guess, yeah, is there any questions or up to that point?
It means bijective.
Yes.
And
So here's a cyclic group, we'll call it C8. There's yeah, eight elements. You kind of think of it as like states on a ring, I guess. So like there's an identity element, and then the way that you move through the set is via rotation. So this is so like it would take eight rotations to get back to the identity, right? So if like move, if you like imagine you're at state one, you can add, you can like apply a rotation, you'd get to state two, apply a rotation, you get to state three, et cetera. So the way that you could like represent these things as permutations of the elements in the set is something like this. So like the identity doesn't modify anything. So you just write that as E. And then the way that you'd read this first one, I don't know where my mouse went here. Yeah. The way you'd read this first one is like, 0 gets mapped to 1, 1 gets mapped to 2, 2 gets mapped to 3, 3 gets mapped to 4. So that would be like one rotation. A different permutation would be 0 gets mapped to 2, 2 gets mapped to 4. So it's like you do two rotations. And so each of these kind of rotations can be thought of as one of the elements of the set or of the group. Sorry. Does that make sense? Like what this notation means?
Yeah, I'm just trying to connect this back to the original definition where a group is a function that maps two elements of the set to one element of the set. And I'm not, I guess it's what are the two elements here?
So you can think
And
of,
what's the one element?
right, so like this one, you can think of like basically you apply this thing to the identity elements.
So
Okay.
but you're saying like where's the multiplication table here?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And I think that so the slight gap there is that if these are the eight elements, then you can compose any of these two by doing one after the other. So like here you kind of just demonstrated if you just do R after R, then you get R squared. And then you get this other group element, which is just called R squared. Right.
He's thinking on an element basis, like what happens to one when you apply R to it, I guess, or
Yeah, so
one
the
to it.
group elements are not the 1, 2, 3, 4. The group elements are the permutations. Like does that make sense?
I think both are valid though.
Yeah, I
Like, I
understand.
know
Yeah.
you use a generalized version.
But it's the permutations that you compose. Like you don't know how to compose 1 and 2. You know how to compose permutations. And you do one
The
after the other.
rule, this is the cycle notation. So the rule of it is that every adjacent, like for example, in the top left, 0 is 1 and 1. The R operation takes 0 and maps it to 1. R takes 1 and maps it to 2. And when you get to the end at 7, it maps 7 back to 0.
Okay.
So you can think of it like that. That's like more object level. But then what David is talking about is like you can generalize and just think of the elements as the actual like entire like collection of numbers and what happens to
Yeah.
the entirety of it.
So like you could take like for example if you take this second element here like 0, 0, 0, 0, yeah, so like this guy, and you like compose it with this guy. Like so this one would rotate once, this one would rotate twice. So this is like you'd take this one, you apply it to this one, you'd get this thing.
I see. And sorry, what do the parentheses mean here?
So these are ordered tuples. So like So
What
when
they're
you have a
like they're like
split,
little
like
cycles.
they're like little sub cycles, I guess.
Okay.
So like here, like 0, 2, 4, and 6, like 6 maps back to 0, and it's independent of what happens to 1, 3, 5, and 7.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. Cool. So there's another set of groups called dihedral groups, which are like these are the study of like polygons. So here, so like D4 is like symmetries of a square. So and here it's not just rotations, but there's also like flips. So you can think of like flips over any of these lettered axes of symmetry, or you can also do rotations of the corners. So there's like you could do like four rotations and get back to the identity element, or you can like compose those with flips. Any questions about that? Yeah.
Here, can you do R and then SC?
Sure. Yeah, you could do
So what would be the
that.
role of what's R times SC?
And
Let's
that
see.
element also needs to be an element of the set, right? Of the group, right?
Right. So like if yeah, so let's say you rotated it and then you flipped over C.
Okay.
So like 0, so first 0 would move to 1, 1 would move to 2, 2 would move to 3.
Okay, yeah, you can do that. I'm just making sure that this list is not exhaustive.
These are exhaustive. So anything like whatever like composition of operations you apply, you'd get back to one of these permutations.
Just be clear, because this notation is different to what I'm used to. So each of the A, B, C, D is like which axis it flips over, or
Right. So you could even just treat there's like there's only one possible flip, and then like compose rotations and one flip, because you can get to everything with a flip and and rotations.
yeah, I'm used to seeing it as R and then R square, et cetera, and then just T and then the
Yeah.
combination.
So that's fine too. Yeah.
So just to make sure I understand. So the second row there would be the operation that takes that square and then maps the top left to the bottom right and the top right to the bottom left. So it would kind of like do this and then this,
which is equivalent to
Yeah, so it's
180.
equivalent to
Oh,
both
180
rotating
degree. Oh,
182.
yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Which is cool, right? Like you can do sort of these flips, these double flips, or you can like do this rotation and it ends up being the
Yeah,
same thing.
makes sense.
Yeah, any other questions? Okay. Cool. So we're currently working on like studying transformers and training them to like learn these sorts of group operations in context. So we're just using a standard transformer architecture, pretty small models. They're like 4 layers and have around 8 to 16 heads and just a pretty small vocab size.
What is standard these days? Like what are you basing it off of? Like what is that model?
So this is like Carpathy's Min GPT.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. But then I think like we're using Rope and stuff like that. Yeah. And like JLU and that one.
I think that one uses JLU by default.
Yeah. So yeah, and then we just train it via like autoregressive Carth entropy loss. I'll show you what the data looks like in a second. But basically the way that we generate data is you take a group of order N and you sample, so you generate a sequence by sampling a bunch of demonstrations of these A, B equals C pairs and just concatenate them together. And for every sequence that we sample in the batch, the vocabulary is also randomly sampled from the pool of vocabulary. So like if you have a group like the cyclic group C5, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 2AF96 are both equally valid. So the vocabulary symbols themselves are kind of arbitrary and the model has to learn how to map like 2 is actually the 0, the identity element, and 1 is, or A is the first element and so on. So here's kind of what some of the data looks like. So we've got these A, B equals C pairs that are representing these group operations. So for like, if you have the vocabulary 0, 1, 2, 3, you get something like this. So like 0 plus 1. So this is like the cyclic group. So you can think of it as like modular addition. So like 0 plus 1 maps 1. 3 plus 2 is 5. Mod 4 maps back to 1. 1 plus 2 is 3, etc. And then same thing. So but if you have a different vocabulary, now B acts as like the 0 element. So like 4 plus B would be 4, etc. and then we also have been playing around with like other strategies of formatting the data. So there's this one that is like called chaining, where instead of having like these nice separators between every example, the answer to one example is the input, part of the input to the next example. And then we've also got this other setup that maybe we started training like 2 days ago or yesterday or something, which we're calling multi-group, which instead of sampling just from a single group or a given sequence, you're sampling from multiple groups in the same sequence. And I don't remember, are they using distinct vocabularies? Yeah. Yeah, so like the model would be able to tell which group it is based on the vocabulary, I guess.
So when you're sampling from the group, are you using just like, are you literally just randomly sampling valid operations on just the entire group? Or are you trying to sample from a, for example, maybe a subgroup and trying to see if it generalizes on the structure? Like, for example, if you're on the group of 24 elements, maybe you're training, maybe you have it sampled on, you know, increments of 3. So 3, 6, 9, 12, 16, 18. 21, 0, and then see if it generalize, if it's able to do it for 4 or do it for like, you know, a different, or like 6 or something like that.
Yeah. So I think David's been doing most of the training, but I think what we're doing is just fixing like the group size and, or yeah, the order, I guess, and then just sampling like stuff of that order. I don't know if it ever sees stuff of lower order.
So
during training,
so there's two questions. So one is, you sample all the groups up to a certain order, right? And then in multi-group, you can sample different groups of like a C4 and dihedral, you know, 5 at the same time or something. But then for when you sample facts from the group, it's just uniform random sample from the Cayley table.
Right? So you wouldn't want to enforce, like, maybe you want to pick up on subgroups or something like that.
No, actually, if you only sampled from a subgroup, then how would you ever learn what the rest of the group is? Because the subgroup is a group that's just closed-ended. You're giving no information.
That's true.
It would be like this impossible task.
I guess if there's a pattern, though, where it, like, loops back.
Oh, but it's random letters.
Oh, I
Right.
see.
Yeah,
Okay.
so it has no idea. If you've only shown it the even numbers, it's never seen an odd number. It wouldn't even know what symbols are assigned to the odd numbers.
Nice.
Right.
My quick question about the data. Is the hat in the beginning supposed to be like something that the model would learn to know it's chaining or something?
This is just like
Question.
a beginning of sentence token
Oh, okay.
style thing. Yeah. And I guess you could like stick these in the middle of two, like in the same prompt. Like you could have multiple kind of like this multi-group thing if you wanted.
Are the models pre-trained or is it
Oh
just
no, these are trained from scratch. Yeah, on just on data like this. And they take like, I don't know, like a day or two to train or something.
Yeah, they take a day or two to train to be okay, and then we're try so trained week to try to get them good.
Cool. So here's just an example of like the how they're getting evaluated. So the way you can read this is like, so here's the example, and then in brackets is the thing that the model predicted, and then to the right of it is the actual correct answer. So for like a many shots prompt, you can look at like the end of the sequence. So like 4-3, the model's predicting B, and the correct answer was B. Example. So in this batch here, I think it got everything right that I can find. Yeah.
You evaluate it on algebraic properties. Like, for example, maybe you want to see if it's like learning or it's falsely learning that the group is abelian, so the order is the same. So instead, like seeing if it predicts like the both things are the
Oh
same
yeah.
output.
Yeah, so we have this a way to like hold out, to have a holdout. So like for example, if you're testing on 3-6, you hold out any examples of 6-3 in the sequence so that it can't rely on just like if the group is abelian, just like copying. And then yeah. And it some of the models can still do that sort of thing. So
So
yeah.
each of the models is trained to perform a very specific operation on a very specific group. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. So we've trained a bunch of different models. Some of them only see like one kind of group, like cyclic groups, or only see like dihedral groups. Some see both kinds of groups.
Okay. And the operation is like one operation, not
Is it
like.
all the R's or is it just one R?
So I guess there's just one R because like you're randomly flipping the vocabulary, and like for cyclic groups, for example, you only need one like operation to cycle through the whole set. Like you only need one rotation. But like for dihedral groups, you need like a rotation and a flip.
Can pre-trained models do this? Have you tested
Okay,
it?
like Llama.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't tested it yet. Worth trying. So one of the cool things that happens when you like train these sort of things is you see these nice little like steps in the training loss, which we think are like sort of these phase changes. I'll just go through some examples. So here's like a evaluation curve of a similar thing. So like you see these nice little steps. And this 20% accuracy cliff or like plateau, we think corresponds to like just randomly guessing vocabulary that's present in the sequence. So I think this was maybe like a what would be like order 8 or something, probably. So like 1 out of 8 is like 12%. So it's maybe slightly better than 12. Maybe it's not an order 8. I don't know. But like that's what, kind of what we think this little cliff is. It's just like it's learned to. That it needs to predict one of the vocabulary numbers that's actually shown up in the prompts. And then at some point, then it just like learns what it's supposed to be doing.
Do you evaluate it on, like, let's say it's a cyclic group. Are you testing it on like raising it to powers beyond the order of the group? Like,
Yeah, so I'll get to those in a minute. Yeah. I think these ones are not, this is just like the in distribution, but I held out evaluation. So here's some other ones. This one is like a multi-group one that David's just been training most recently. I think this yellow one is a cyclic one. This think one is the dihedral one. So there's like these nice cool training curves. So here, yeah, here's some examples of like what happens when you test, like train on like an abelian group, like cyclic groups, and then evaluate on like non-abelian groups. So for the cyclic groups, so like this one was trained on cyclic groups up to order 12. And so like it's getting these like C8, C4, cross C2, and E8. These are all abelian groups, and it's like getting basically 100% on those groups. And then when you test it on these groups that are like not that are not abelian, it's like dihedral 4, that gets like 80% or something.
Was it predicting like abelian properties when none existed?
I mean, I would guess so, right? Because it's only ever seen abelian stuff.
Yeah.
You control for the order center of the group, that is how many abelian pairs there are in the group. Since dihedral has a lot of the rotations are abelian, so there's a lot of.
Right. No, this is just like the standard dihedral group. And then so then on the other side, if you like train on the dihedral group up to order 12 and then test on the same groups, like then it can do all of these other ones that the cyclic group struggled with.
I'm actually a little bit confused. Okay. So my previous question was the model has only seen one type of operations, because in your book, like in your prompt, you have no way to specify the operation other than actually performing the operation. Right. So how can you evaluate it on a completely different type of operation?
You just give it a prompt that demonstrates that operation, I guess, and just see how it does it. I don't know. I don't. Maybe I don't understand your
No,
question.
that's a question. That's a question. So think about that. Do you understand the setting? The in-context setting is cool this way.
How does the operation table size compare to this number of examples? You know,
Table size compared
like
to
if you
the
provide
table
the whole
size.
table,
Oh yeah.
maybe it's
So if you, if you like increase the size of the group, maybe I don't have a. Maybe here's a good instance of that. So like if you increase the order of the group, so these are C4, C6, and C8. Like the you can see these sort of.
you need more examples.
You need more examples to learn a bigger group. Yeah.
I have one follow-up question. So okay. So while you're training it, you don't usually expect the in-context learning ability to develop for, let's say, once you have the comma, it's kind of done, right? It's kind of like a different operation with a different alphabets in your vocabulary, right? So you don't expect the in-context learning ability to develop to see and learn from example what it's supposed to do.
So within like a one sequence, at least for the non-multigroup setting, these are all demonstrating the same operation.
The same group, you've
The same
not.
group, same group, like yeah.
I guess my question was, okay, if it can perform other type of operations just by looking at the examples, it has developed some sort of in-context learning ability.
Right.
It is very surprising to me because I don't see obvious how it can develop that. Because once you see that comma, it's done. Like in the first example, the first purple thing, purple example, once it has seen the comma, the operation that starts after that comma is completely different from 0, 1 equals one, right? So you don't really expect it to develop this in-context learning ability to learn from examples. But it is still doing that, and that's
I,
very
wait, I
odd
don't,
to
I
me.
don't, I don't understand your intuition. So you see the comma,
Yeah. And
and then,
then 3, 2 equals one.
yep, that's just another operation in the same group.
Another operation in the same group, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm just a little bit surprised that how you expect that the in-context learning ability is developing inside the model. Because, I mean, you kind of don't expect it to develop in that way, because I mean after comma it is doing something completely different.
So how is it, so like how is it different from like if you said, hey, you go to llama,
Yeah.
and you have English word and Italian word, and you didn't, you know, explicitly tell them to translate into Italian, but you give it 10 examples of like the English and the corresponding Italian, the English and the corresponding Italian. Eventually, it gets the idea. You give an English word, it says, I know what to do. I'll give you the Italian word corresponding to this, right? And so isn't so now here it's a little different, right? It's, you're giving it a pair.
Yeah.
So you're giving it a pair, and then you're saying on the right-hand side of the equals, oh, this pair means that. So on, it's sort of, instead of English and Italian, you're sort of like,
this is,
I'm going to give you a pair to sum up, and I'll tell you what it means.
But this is not completely equivalent, right? Because the pre-trained model has seen a lot of text, right? It actually has to attend to the context to understand what it's trying to do. But here, once, after it has seen a comma, it has no reason to go back and look into its previous context. Does that make sense?
I guess if you train only on one group, right?
Yeah.
If you train on only that's the point I'm trying to make.
If you only train on one group,
If you only train on one group, then once it has seen the comma, it has no reason to go back and look at its previous examples.
So to be clear,
yeah,
right. Okay, so there's it is when it's trained on a distribution of groups. For example, we take cyclic groups from order 3 to order 10, and we sample over all the cyclic groups during training. But then the killer here is also every time it instantiates a group, it uses different letters for every one of the group elements. So the group might be represented by the letters B741 instead of 0123 the next time.
Okay.
There's a training sample. Right.
Oh, okay.
Right. Does that make sense?
Okay, I think
so. It really has to pay attention. It's like, oh yeah, I don't know which one's acting like the zero right now. Maybe B is acting like the zero. I can't tell. I gotta understand the structure of what's happening. And then after it sees a few examples, it says, I get it. B is a zero. If anybody adds something to B, it doesn't change anything anymore.
Okay. So the mapping of the vocabularies and the size of the vocabularies is not constant, for example.
Per
model, right?
Per sentence,
it has to be constant.
Per sentence, it's constant, but then across sentences,
okay,
you keep on doing different ones.
Okay.
Right.
So the group size changes and the mapping changes, so that the way it has to do is certainly understand.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So even to figure out who is who, you need to look at the context.
Yeah, to figure out who's who, yeah.
Context kind of provides all of the constraints.
Yes. The constraints only come from the context.
It's like once you the goal is, I think, for it to learn the group axioms. And then for a certain number of examples in context, like it's really easy to see on a Cayley table, which is like basically where you have each group element, and then each cell of the grid is the output of the two elements applied with respect to like left to top. And if you have like a partially incomplete Cayley table, sometimes just because of the axioms of a group, you can fill in the rest of the table just because there's no other like there's only a unique way you can fill it that satisfies group axioms. So I imagine in this context, like after you've trained it a while, it picks up on what the rules are of this thing. And then you can give it a sentence which encodes like an incomplete group, but it should have enough information to deduce what the rest of it is.
Just to clarify and summarize. So
that's an excellent summary.
Yeah. So basically like the model itself is learning to train like the type of group itself and what exactly is the sequence, and then the in context learning, like it just gives the context of what the group could be, which is the impression. Okay.
Yeah, like if you were doing a group theory test and you've studied on dihedral groups and symmetric groups of certain sizes, and then your professor gives you some new group of a different order you haven't seen, but gives you enough examples that you like, oh, okay, this is good. Because you have to have an inverse, because you have identity, blah, 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 and then you build the rest.
I see.
So it's cool, right? So so these models have been trained on cyclic and dihedral groups. They've never been trained on direct products of groups or the quaternion group or whatever other crazy groups were in this table. But then if you like give it a bunch of examples with one of these weird groups that was never demonstrated during training, like with some weird multiplication table structure that's never seen. It's like, oh, yeah, I can answer that. Even like I've never seen in context AB before. You never demonstrated BA to me. But if you ask me what AB is, I can get that right 99% of the time.
So the making should find the group axioms.
What? Yeah, so there should, like, it's somehow...
The making should find the implementation of the
group. Somehow it's implementing the group axioms or some...
Which was only implicit.
That's right. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
But you need it to get the curves up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you have a bug.
Unless there's some bug.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm still confused when I look at the sequences because, like, I'm still confused on what, like, if is it, like, the little nodes in the graph or is it, like, the rotation that is the group element? And, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, or if you have a dihedral group, how do you have a rotation and a flip if there's only one?
Yeah, so I probably should have put, like, a big Cayley table of, like, how pairs of things map to other things. But, so for, like, cyclic groups, it's kind of weird because you can think of, like, since you only have, like, since the way that you transition from, like, I guess, like, transitioning from, like, states here is, like, equivalent to, like, the operation that happens when you multiply two elements of the group. So
I have an idea.
Yeah.
We can use Wikipedia. Can you show a Cayley table of the dihedral group?
One good intuition that helps too, I think, because there's a lot of equivalent representations of group operations and stuff, especially with like dihedral group and cyclic groups, or permutation groups. It helps to think of them as functions. So like a rotation is a function. And like a flip is a function, and you can compose them. So a rotation and a flip can be thought of as like a composition. And so since, you know, composing is not usually, you can't apply a composition in opposite order. It helps with like grounding the intuition of groups. And then it kind of makes sense why you can do these like really complicated geometric like rotations and stuff, because each of those are just like an operation and you can just like think of them as functions basically.
Let's see. I'm curious if Arnab, it made sense to you why, even after a
comma. Yeah.
Oh, good. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Even after a comma, do you understand why the model has an incentive to look back?
Yeah. Now I understand. Yes.
Okay.
So here's the way they, this is proof wiki, not Wikipedia, but close enough. So here's the way that they represent elements in the dihedral group. So they have like an identity element, and then they have A's and B's. So A probably corresponds to rotation. So like, so they have A squared, A cubed. And then they have B, which probably corresponds to like one flip, like one of the axes of symmetry, then like fix that. And then you can get to all the other elements via composing the flip and then rotations. So like if you take like E and anything, you'll get back to that same element. And then if you like compose A with something, like you can see like A composed with A3 gets you back to the identity. Like A composed with B gets you to like BA3, for example.
So these are the things in your ICL.
Right. So you just like pick, so like one of the AB equals X pairs is like, you pick something from the left, you pick something from the right, you say A, or yeah, I guess these are both A and B, but so you pick something from here, pick something from here, like slot one, slot two equals whatever there. Entries in the table. Yeah.
And the vocab size would be just like the number of elements in the grid.
So like right. So like here the vocab size is 8. Yeah.
Oh.
And you just pick a random set of 8 from like the pool of 16.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which polygon is this?
So this is the square.
Mm-hmm. So this table encodes all of the symmetric all of the transformations that keep the square unchanged. Like rotation and flex.
Keep the square and put
so
it again.
That's the function
yes.
point of
yeah,
view.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the you have a square.
Mm-hmm.
And from that you could derive this kind of thing. You're like, okay,
right.
what can I do that doesn't change the square?
Right.
Right. And this is also where this comes from, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see if they have a picture.
Okay.
Like, yeah, so they've got a square here.
It's like fixed in spot.
Yeah.
You can still rotate as long as like all the points are like on fixed locations.
Right. So like, I think that's a very, yeah.
Yeah. So here's like.
The most intuitive way for me at least.
So you can like rotate it things of order 90 degrees. So like 1, 2, 3. And then if you do 4, it's back to the same one. Then they have all these. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Go back to the.
Would be cool if you could see a square in the representation. Like if you do some
that would be cool.
GTA or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
let's see if maybe here okay. So I'll zoom through these other ones. These are just we've trained a bunch of different models and like been evaluating them on different kinds of groups. So here's like one that got trained on multi. So Rosette is like a combination of dihedral and cyclic groups. So it's seen both kinds of groups. And it generalizes pretty well to all sorts of stuff, except for like this is quasi group, which isn't actually a group. You remember that like thing we saw at the beginning of like this. So I don't remember what quasi group is, but it doesn't have some of the properties of a group.
It's not associative.
Okay, it's not associative. What was that?
I didn't know. You tested me on it, and I didn't know what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Did you explain it to me?
But I mean, yeah, okay, great. And then this is testing it on groups that are of higher order. So it's only seeing things up to order 10, and then if you give it stuff that's order 12, it can still kind of do it, though it's not nearly as good. Yeah. Cool. So I'll talk a little bit. We've sort of been diving in a little bit of like trying to understand what exactly is the mechanism behind how these models do this sort of thing. I'll talk about three things. So one is probing for the identity, like and then just analyze intention patterns, and then some intervention that we've done. So one thing, so like the identity element is like a nice component of a group. And we thought it'd be interesting to see if we could pick out whether, like, so because the vocabulary is random, like the model has to sort of, we think the model has to figure out like the mapping of the elements to which, like, the like, kind of like the, what would you call it, like the elementary basis, I guess, of the group. So this is an experiment that Rohit has been working on of basically you can train a probe to determine whether a token is the identity element or not, and you sample these in a way so that it sees, like, let's say you have a vocabulary, so like C4 you have like A B C D, so sometimes A will be the zero and sometimes A won't be the identity, and so like we control for that and then measure whether this probe can detect if something is the identity. And it seems like there's sort of this shift so these are at different layers. So like layer zero, after layer zero, after layer one, after layer two, and after layer three. So like after layer two, it seems like there's a shift of when the model can sort of tell whether something is the identity or not. And this was for C4, and then similar thing for like a dihedral 5 group.
Right. It would be very cool to see these accuracies evolve based on the number of shots. Like how accurate is, I think it's probably the right thing to train a single probe. But it'd be cool to see what the accuracy of the probe is after, one shot, 10 shots,
Oh, yeah.
50 shots.
I feel like there's like a certain like there's a point where when you're given one example, you immediately know the thing's the identity. For example, if you have A, B is equal to B, you know by the axioms immediately that's an identity is an identity.
It would be good. Yeah, that would be a cool thing to do. Like before and after as the first demonstration of AB equals B. Right? That'd be another nice one.
So shots with respect to the zeros that it has seen and also the examples that it has seen. So two different shots we can look at.
Sure.
Like when you evaluate the group, why don't you like look at all of the missing, or do you look at all of the missing pairs in the table, or just randomly sampled
So
ones?
you can like fix a holdout of like it's never seen this pair or its commutative inverse during a sequence, and then test whether it can get that pair, and then you can just like change that holdout.
So these performance numbers aren't randomly sampled. Hundreds of different random holdouts.
Okay, but you would expect the probe accuracy to be higher, right? Like somehow.
Right. So it's really weird that the probe accuracy is lower. But maybe it's not, it depending on the number of shots, because the accuracy here is like low when you only have 10 shots.
Yeah, but then you probably would include also the shots, right, for the probe. Like, I would take something where they are close to one and then look at the,
Like
yeah,
probably
as you suggested, basically.
like after 100 shots,
Yeah, how this evolves with the shots. Yeah.
Oh, we
Yeah,
do.
I agree. Like it's weird that the model can like perform the operation of zero, but like it doesn't know that the thing is zero. It's a little weird, right? Yeah. I don't know. Sorry, Ronan, go ahead.
So we do have the same probe accuracies when the number of shots is one, like literally when it just sees the first example in the entire group. And you can see that all the layers have like close to random accuracies. And then this is that I think shot 75 to 150 somewhere randomly sampled. And only at the layer 2 and 3 do you see a higher accuracy now. And still for 0 and 1, it still stays near the random baseline.
I see. So this is after 75 shots. So it's actually, the accuracy is pretty low because the accuracy of the model is pretty high after 75 shots. Is that right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's 99% accurate after 75 shots, but still the probe accuracy is at 70, 75. So there's some gap where the model does an operation well, but doesn't know it's a zero or not, which is kind of wonky.
Is this above, like, does it matter whether it's like above the result or like the two?
Oh, of like which token you're
Yeah, like which
sampling
side
on?
of the equal
I
sign?
actually don't know. Rohit, do you remember, or I guess, yeah, what are you, what, where are you picking up the hidden states from to train your probe?
I'm picking up the hidden states from the zero operator. So from the left side of the equals, where the actual zero is
Like
operating.
here
Yeah.
or here or something.
Now there's two spots there. There's the A spot and there's a B spot. Are you training the same probe on both spots?
Yeah, it's the same probe on A and B.
Oh, what if there's two different representations? What if there's a left zero and a right zero? Maybe you need two different probes. And then there's also the C spot, the answer spot. Maybe we should try training three different probes. We got burned with this in Othello, right? Do you remember the story there when we trained all these probes on detecting white pieces and detecting, predicting black pieces? And it turns out that was totally wrong. We need to detect white pieces only when white was to move. And when black is to move, then you should use that same probe to detect black pieces. There's this parity issue,
You are
right?
the prior work here.
What?
I didn't know that you are the prior work of this.
So, we might want to be careful with that, Rohit.
Okay.
Did that answer your question? Okay. Let's see. Okay, cool. So the other thing I'll chat about before I'm done is just some cool attention patterns I've found so far. So there's some interesting heads in layer two. So like at layer zero, all the attention is just like kind of looking at everything. It's not super interpretable. And then at layer one, it's both like all the attention heads are just looking at like the very last query pair. Which I guess is maybe interesting. But in layer two, there's like some nice algorithmic structure to the attention patterns. So there's one head that like attends to like answers. So like if you have something that's like AVX, it'll attend to the X's where the example looks like something like A and blank X. And then there's another head that attends to stuff where it's like something BX. And then there's also heads that check whether this like the commutative inverse is in the examples or not. Because like I think this makes sense for like cyclic groups. You can just go ahead and copy the answer. If this thing shows up, you can just copy paste. And then there's another head that looks at like all the places where A or B are the answers. So it's sort of like Michael was mentioning, like maybe it's sort of just like figuring out all the places in the Cayley table that are helpful. And then just like deducing what's left and then voting somehow or something. Yeah.
Have you tried perturbing these things, like these heads, like seeing if you perturb the top one and see if the answer somehow relates to if you had A in one of the slots of the multiplication?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So like the top one interpret, like if that head fires, then maybe the model thinks, oh, something is getting left multiplied by A. And so maybe if you perturb that head to make it like for another pair that doesn't have A in it and you perturb it, maybe it will then like change its belief to think that A is on the left or something like that. And you would see it in the output based on it.
I see. I haven't messed with like the attention patterns, but that's I think that'd be interesting to do. Yeah. The only thing, so yeah, I guess I'll walk through. This may be hard to see. Let's see. So I'll walk through these attention patterns and then I'll walk through the stuff that I have done with attention and then yeah, I'm curious to hear some other stuff you guys think might be interesting. So like this one was 2, 7, so this one attends to like A something X. So here the query is 4, 5. So like these are attending to like 4, 7, 3, 4, 2, 6, 4, 4, 0, four,
Oh,
two,
it's
six.
always attending to the answer.
Yeah, it tends to the answer of something that's like A something X.
Oh, that's cool. So you have to squint at this and like, which answers is it attending to? It's like, oh, where four is the first term.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
And so this one, I think this next one was attending to stuff where the B shows up. So it's like 2, 5, 7, and then 3, 5, 0 were the strongest. And it's like some of these, it like weakly attends to the equals where the 5 is in the first slot. Which I don't know if that's interesting or not.
Okay.
These one, the so this the L20 looks for the commutative inverse. So this one, if it doesn't show up, it just attends to the last equals. So like here I held out 5, 4, so it never saw 5, 4 in the sequence. But then if you do stick 5, 4 in there, then it just like strongly attends to the answer of 5, 4. Let's see. And then two, this was similar. So like it attends to stuff that's it's kind of a mix between these other ones. So it attends to like the answers where 4 is in like the A is in the A slot or the B is in the B slot.
Oh, like the disjunction of those two?
And or the what do you mean disjunction?
Or yeah, the union.
The union, yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
And then it also attends to stuff where it's flipped. So like the A is in the B slot and the B is in the A slot. And then this bottom one is like attending to places where the A and the B show up as answers to other queries. So like four, it's just a bunch of 4s and 5s. So, and this one is a 1. I don't know why it's attending to those, but yeah. So yeah, I'll end with just one passion experiment. So I take two different groups, so like a dihedral group and a cyclic group that have the same vocabulary but just different queries, and then try and check whether I can patch activations from attention heads to get the model to flip the group that it thinks is going on. So like in this case, if I patch from the dihedral into the cyclic, I think 1, 6 should flip to 5 instead of, yeah, so instead of from 7, it should flip to 5. And so, like, if you do this a bunch of times for a bunch of different pairs of, like, if you sample different sequences, you get just kind of like, I don't quite understand what's going on here yet. I'm not setting up some more exhaustive experiments, but at the moment it seems a little bit random. There's maybe some structure, but it seems like there's like you can patch a bunch of different heads for different pairs of examples and like get it to flip. But it's kind of cool that you can get it to flip at all. Like you can make the cyclic group think that, okay, now I'm suddenly a dihedral. I should be doing the dihedral operation instead. And it's like pretty confident. Yeah, so these are like the clean predictions from the cyclic group, and then when you intervene, it flips back, flips to 5. So anyway, yeah, that's it.
Eric, I have a question. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the intervention experiment that you've done, is the 1-6 operation seen in the context from dihedral 5?
No. So it's this one is held out from both pairs,
oh,
or
nice.
Both sequences, yeah.
Nice.
So both 1-6 and 6-1. So like 6-1 doesn't show up here, and 1-6 doesn't show up here, and 6-1 also doesn't show up here.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But cool. So I'm curious, Michael, this attention thing.
Oh, I have lots of thoughts. That could be a group. If you think about firing an attention head or any of the attention heads as like a sort of like operation, maybe that forms a group structure. Like, you know, you can apply them together and get another valid output as if you fired another attention head, and then there's like an inverse, and then like there's an identity one. It's a silly thought. But with the head thing, what I was thinking, because it actually, you could automate this really with, because what you can do is, because so say you define a rule like a question mark equals something, and that's like one head that attunes to that specifically. You can think about, so maybe you have that and then you have question mark b equals something. You can imagine what happens when you fire the two heads. Think about all the counterfactual ways they could interpret it. And then for each counterfactual, for example, it might think, oh, it will only be the operation a, b, nothing else. It may think it's a question mark b. It may think that it's like just, you know, B gets wiped out. And for each of these counterfactual scenarios, you can then, using Cayley table, generate like a whole bunch of valid operations for it and then test your hypothesis. And you have the Cayley table as reference, so you can actually see if it's like learning it or not. So, and since you have all these heads, you can then extrapolate to like all possible head combinations, which is really cool. It might not be completely well-defined, but like, I think that could be a place to like really just like,
cool.
Can you show your patching plots again?
Sorry.
The heat maps?
Which ones? The heat maps.
The last ones.
These guys, yeah.
So the rows are layers here, right? And the columns are heads.
Yeah, yeah, layers and head index, yeah.
And why are there three of them?
These are just different, if I sample different pairs, so like a different dihedral sequence and a different cyclic sequence, but with the same.
And are you patching the heads output?
I'm patching, yeah, the head's output.
Mm-hmm. So the three different heat maps are three different experiments.
Right.
But on exactly the same task.
Same experiment, same held out query.
Just different demonstrations.
Different demonstrations.
Uh-huh, okay.
So like, yeah, it's still trying to solve what 1-6 is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of a mess. Kind of a mess, yeah.
Well, but like, I mean, the demonstrations are randomly sampled Cayley table entries, so it makes sense that different heads would be responsible maybe for different
maybe,
yeah, for maybe the heads just look at the position of the examples or something, you know, and so, then you randomly sample your demonstrator. And they end up in different positions, like the relevant ones.
I don't think the attention, well, at least the attention heads I was looking at, they're not position based. They're definitely context based.
Right.
Yeah.
One seems to be like
Which one?
layer one.
Layer one.
Yeah, seems to be like at least
Oh,
heads.
this guy. This
Yeah,
guy?
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that one shows up sometimes. Yeah, 1-3.
But also like in the seven, it shows up in 12.
1-7, 1-7, yeah.
In all of them, at least layer one has.
There, this one. Yeah, like there is some overlap, but
So
like
you should annotate. Oh no, sorry.
so like all the ones
Yeah.
that I was showing you guys are like in layer two, and like at least in these three samples, none of them show up. But like in a bunch of other ones that aren't here, like they'll show up as important.
Yeah, there's only
If
24 heads, right?
you change the query.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I'm really curious to know what sort of stuff is like going through these attention heads. Yeah, so that would be interesting to play that with.
How do you, like, you have any ideas of algebraic structure that you can test in this? Because, like, I have so many thoughts of, like, oh, you could probe to see if it understands when there's an inverse operation applied, or, like, if one element's inverse of another, you can think, oh, is this an even group element? Is this an odd group element? Like, there's, like, a lot of, like, you know, is this element in the center of the group? Is this not in the center of the group? Et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's like so many, and with each of these things, there's like a very valid definition of what it means for the thing. That means you can generate examples and also that you can evaluate on, yeah. So, yeah, I was curious what geometrically or algebraically you're kind of leaning towards with like some of the stuff. Unit evaluation
Haven't done
feel.
anything with that yet, but yeah.
Yeah, the probing is powerful here. But, you know, even just to include probes for all of the possible elements of all of your groups or something that you consider, but not just the zero.
Just train it for like
You could
every
have it
element, yeah.
for, once you figured out the zero, you could have it for every element.
Yeah, it seems like the zero is kind of a warm up, right? Because zero is unique and stuff like that. But yeah, you could, that's a good idea. Understand that.
You're going to create like a big, like, you know, a giant, like, so you train the model and then you just like kind of meticulously document like every single like correlation in it so that eventually maybe there's some like giant thing that makes sense in respect to how it's understanding like the group algebra. Oh, this is
That's
this.
kind of the goal, yeah. I don't know. So previously you were also looking at like PCAs of embeddings and stuff like Oh, that, right?
yeah.
You know, maybe you haven't looked at it in the current
I
models.
haven't looked at the most in the most recent models yet, but there's some nice like if you cluster hidden states of different like what do you call them? Like group elements, they cluster nicely and like the like for example I think like the zero element was like all by itself in that little space when you do PCA of it, and then like the other ones are like I think these are just for cyclic groups and it's like in a nice like straight line. And stuff. So there's like there's I think there's some cool geometric structure that the model's learning that we can probably pick out. But yeah, I haven't done it in the most recent ones, which are I think they're better now. So
The new models, yeah.
Excited to see if like the classic group stuff like group product or like decomposing groups into subgroups, like whether there's like an algebraic way that it represents that'd be really, really cool.
yeah, because it because it because we like tested on some of the direct products and stuff, so like the like C4 C2, you know, and like that's just fine even though I never saw that during training. So like it's got to have some nice little subgroup stuff that it's learned how to do. Yeah, it's cool. I think it's a cool setting. All right, I think I'll be there.
Okay, cool.
Thank you guys. So we'll convene again at noon. I think that we've got our seminar visiting speaker for this week is this project called the National Deep Inference Fabric. And they're gonna overview you know the back end design. Is that right? Okay, cool. So see you guys.
Yeah.